Good morning again, Tarek Addict, and it is my pleasure to introduce this morning's speaker. I've known Terry for quite some time. I don't know if Terry remembers, but I met him back in 2011 or 12 at a CA convention, and my home group at the time was putting on a step workshop. We had three different people cover each step throughout the course of a day, and you know, Terry was the Saturday night speaker, and he came and sat in the back of our workshop, and it meant a lot to us that he did that. And and I don't know, that just imprinted on my psyche as it relates to this man, because not all people that are out there with they can articulate the message, but sometimes I spend time with him, and that's about all the time I want to spend with him. But Mr. Murphy and I have spent a lot of time together in my condo in Atlanta, and man, this guy just warms my heart. I absolutely adore this man. I've had him to Atlanta to do workshops, been at other functions that he's been at. He's going to be joining us for our retreat next year with his lovely wife. And, you know, my sponsor, Ralph, is just one of, I mean, they think so highly of this man. I don't want to gas Terry up, man. That's not what I'm trying to do here, man. Just, you meet some real ones, man, on this path, as Mike D says. And Terry is a real one, but he's got this magnificent heart, man. And that's what we're talking about here, the language of the heart. So I can't wait to see what Terry has to share with us this morning. And without further ado, I give you Terry.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Terry, and I'm an addict and an alcoholic. It's so good to be with all of you. You know, this is an incredible format. I feel honored and blessed to be amongst so many men who are on this path doing the work this morning. I picked a couple things out of the big book that I want to read, and then I'm going to share my experience around that. I'm going to share with you the experience with the step work I'm doing these days as well. So on page 100 of the big book, it says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back and realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates or direction of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. That's one of my very favorite promises in the book. And then on page 124, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have. The key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. So, y'all got big books. You could do all the reading you want. But the reason I want to touch on those couple of things is because when I follow the direction of a higher power, my life gets better and better and better. And when I follow the direction of Terry Murphy, I devolve instead of evolve. When I'm doing this work in recovery, I came in so broken and so battered. And as I continually do the work, my life continually, as my old sponsor before he passed away used to say, my life unfolds into goodness. Now, I said, my name's Terry Murphy. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. Keep it with the way y'all introduce yourselves. I've been sober for 31 years and 11 months. My sponsor is Father John B. And if you would have told me I'd be sober more than 30 years and that I would have a Catholic priest as a sponsor, I'd have told you you're absolutely nuts, because I never thought sobriety was possible. I didn't know that I ever wanted it. In fact, I didn't. What I wanted was I wanted to get high. And I would have kept doing that because I'm a child addict. I chased the dope my whole life and the drink. And the idea of getting sober was never on the radar. But I did the drugs and the alcohol, but at some point they started doing me. And my life started falling apart. And the thing that I had used that had brought so much goodness and comfort to me started to destroy me. I love the format of your meeting here. I heard one guy say he was from hell and gone nowhere, Georgia. And I thought to myself, Dan, that's a spot. But what really inspired me this morning is one of the dudes on the screen was holding a baby. And I looked at that and I thought to myself, it's because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I get to be a father. See, my boys were 7 and 3 when I got sober. When we get together with my little brother and his wife and me and my wife, and we talk about the memories of those early years with the kids, they'll be talking, well, you remember we did this, we did that, and the little one did this. And I hear those stories and I think, I don't ever admit this. But in my mind, I'm thinking, no, I don't remember any of that. Even though I was physically present, I wasn't emotionally available. My mind was filled with the constant thought of another drink or another drug or covering up the lie I just told or putting back the money I just stole or trying to not be discovered for the wretched motherfucker I'd become. You know, I was raised right. I knew right from wrong. I always tried to live by good principles, but my life melted down. I had a beautiful wife. I had beautiful kids. Loved them with all my heart. Sons who I would kill for. Sons who I would die for. But sons who I could not get sober for. I've raised my right hand to God. I've sworn on the Bible. I beg God to help me. And I kept picking up. I'm an addict who will go to any lengths for my drugs and my alcohol. I got a hole right here in my arm where I shot dope. I had a veterinarian syringe, a big ass syringe filled with cocaine. And I had no needle. And I thought, what are my options here? I could squirt the dope in my mouth. Now, I got to tell you, before this happened, I was already high and I lost the needle. So what do I do now? I'm high. I got a syringe full of dope. It's the middle of the night. No, what do I do, right? So I thought to myself, well, my options were I could squirt it in my mouth. Thought, nah. You know, I could save it till tomorrow. That was definitely not an option. And then I heard a voice say, just shove it up your ass. And I go, man, nothing goes in my ass. That's not my story. And then I heard this voice in my head say, just shoot up without the needle. So I tied off and I went, bam. Now that shit's abnormal. But that is really not as abnormal as 10 years before when I was strung out on heroin. And the only way I could get the only liquid available was a little piss moat around a mountain of turd in a train station in Stuttgart, Germany. No water. The only liquid was that shit and piss water. And I drew that stuff up. Told myself that the fire had killed the germs. I drank the same way I shot dope or smoked cocaine. And to me, that was normal because that's how I rolled. That's how, in the beginning, that's how the people I was with rolled. But then what happened along the way is all the friends faded away because everything to me was just like isolated. In the beginning, I would use drugs and alcohol. Like it says in our beautiful book, it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Like, yeah, that's right. If you like effect, though, I'll show you as some effect. Drop some acid, smoke some angel dust on it. I've always been insane in the way that I drink and drug. When we'd be sitting there partying, having cocktails, having fun, everybody start peeling off and heading home. And I'd turn up the music and I go, one more for the ditch. And it was always one more. I didn't have a stop button. I didn't know what drugs and alcohol were doing to my life. It was like my life was a roller coaster up and down, right? I would build it up and do really good. Then I'd tear it down. I'd build it up and I'd tear it down. I'd build it up and I'd tear it down. New cities, new starts, new jobs, start new companies. I'm also a dreamer. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. When I met my wife, Donna, I rolled into her life like a knight in shining armor. And man, I threw her on the back of my steed. We went riding off. And we're going to have ourselves a great life. And I told her, baby, stick with me. You're going to be rich. We're going to travel. You're going to have so much fun. And in the beginning, it was like that. But as the years went by, as the drinking and drugging progressed, she watched her knight in shining armor turn into a rust bucket. Just a shell of the warrior that I was. I was raised, I am the son of a living and loving God. I was raised to be a badass. I was not raised to be a man led around through life by an addiction and a need for another hit of dope or another drink of alcohol. So the process of this 12 steps for me had been the process of reclaiming the real man, the person that I knew in my heart I was supposed to be. That knight in shining armor, that warrior. And that is what the steps have brought me to over the years. I've done immense amounts of step work. I know exactly why I'm here with you this morning. Because I seek people that teach and people that model right behavior. Because if I want to get better, I can't, let me put it this way. I can't do better if I don't know better. So I'm stuck in this hellhole of a life with an idea in my mind of what a man's supposed to be. And then the reality of what I'm becoming. When I drink and drug, I'm an animal. I got this beautiful wife. I got these two sons that I adore, but yet I rob my children's piggy bank. I trade my wedding ring for a $20 rock of cocaine. It isn't that I didn't know the value of gold and diamonds. It's just I needed that hit. Now follow me on this. I never would have traded my wedding ring for the first one. But when you put one in me, it demands the next one. And so there I am, right? You know, burning my life down. And I know in my mind, my story. And my story is the story of a man who had potential, who has done nothing but fail. And I know my shame, and I know my pain. I know my story that when my oldest son, Devin, was 3, and my wife got pregnant again, and the miracle of life was unfolding. And I know that at 7 months, she said to me, honey, there's something wrong. The baby's not moving. And we went down. We were doing natural childbirth and they did an ultrasound and they came in. They said, Mr. and Mrs. Murphy, we're really sorry, but your son's dead. And then they turned to me and my wife, no clergy, no counsel. They said, you know, ma'am, and keep them with the natural order of things, you need to carry that dead baby to term. We walked out of that hospital, my wife pregnant out to here, and everywhere we go, people go, oh, is it a boy or a girl? Have you decorated the room yet? Are you going to teach them to play ball? And we stopped answering those questions, and we would just stuff those feelings. My poor three-year-old at home was thinking, why are mom and dad crying all the time? What the hell's happened in my life? Nobody's talking about my brother Brandon. Finally, after about a month and a half, we couldn't take it anymore. And we went down, we said, man, you got to do something. What I heard was, what I thought Donna said was, we got to go and induce labor. I can't take this anymore. It was a couple of years ago, and I told that story. And when I was done telling the story, my wife, Donna, said, she said, you know, honey, that's not what I said that day. I said, what did you say? And she said, I said, if they don't take this baby, I'm going to kill myself. But yet even so, my mind hears what it wants to hear. My disease knows how to deflect my truth. So we went, we spent hours that day at the hospital trying to give birth to that baby, right? I'm holding her hand. She's breathing. When my son Brandon was born, they wrapped him in a blanket and they tried to hand me my son. And I backed away and put my hands up and I said, no, no, no. And I left my baby boy in that hospital. About a week later, where my unemployed wife and my three-year-old son were devastated beyond anything I could ever comprehend, I fled the state of Arizona and moved to Utah with one of my wife's best friends. What kind of person does that? How lost did I get? I like to say that, you know, what ended up happening with that is I ended up getting back with Donna about a year or two later. We had another son named Brian, and we never talked about that because there was no way to deal with it, because all I am is a man. My wife knew I can't talk about the problems and the pain because I have nothing to do with that shit. To have the awareness that you're a motherfucker doesn't change anything. That's why this program works. That's why it went from two men in 1935 to 20 million around the world. Because we can, this program takes my shame and my pain and it gives it direction. And it gives as much freedom as I'm willing to seek. So my life was so bad, I was convinced that there was only one way out for me, and that was to kill myself. Because I'm there, I'm raw, I'm strung out. I know that there is no way to stop because I've stopped. I know that my mom begged me to stop. My dad beat me with the strap to try to get me to stop. The schools use counselors, the police use handcuffs, the judges use sentences, the military use court martials, and nothing ever worked. Donna used love. The gift of sons, nothing ever worked. So there I was, knowing there's no way to stop, convinced that the only way out is to kill myself. And that was the condition of my life. When a man properly armed with the truth about himself worked his 12th step on me. A man worked his 12th step on me. He reached into my grave, into my darkness. And he said, bro, there's another way to live. This isn't how the story has to end. Somebody else isn't going to pick up the pen and write the rest of your life story. There's a way to get clean. There's a way to stay clean. There's a way to reclaim your dignity, your honor, and your valor. I didn't believe that was possible. The evidence in my life proved that it wasn't. And it is true. There isn't. No one recovers. Nobody I've ever met recovers from the place that I was of hopelessness with my sheer willpower. You know, I know how to go to work. I know how to do things, but I don't have the power. It's just not there. It's not in me. It's not of me. I cannot stop. I can beg God, and God's given me lots of opportunities to get off the highway to hell, to use that off ramp. But the problem was, is every time I stopped and every time I raised my right hand, I swore I was done. I meant it. But I have this disease that what happens to me is the longer I'm sober, the worse I get, the worse I feel. I can't take it. I try to do sobriety, but the pressure mounts to where all I can do is go get me one. And the sound that's universal is this one. I got to get what I'm trying to do right. And I go and I cop, it's a drink or whatever it is. When I pour that one down, the sound is. You know that sound, gentlemen? But then it was the next one that destroyed me, and the one after that. So what I had to do in my life is I had to find a way to get that relief, to hear that. Naturally. I tried church, I tried prayer, I tried all, nothing worked. But the reason I did this program is because the man 12-stepping me looked at me. He owned a pawn shop. I was in there. I had pawned my Bose speakers that morning. And I was drinking liquor and hitting that crack pipe. And it was on me so bad that day. And so I went back to the pawn shop and walked in and go, dude, I don't really want those Bose speakers, you know, that I dreamed of owning and used to play when we were having fun at my house, hear that beautiful music. And I said, I don't really want those speakers anymore. I'm not going to reclaim them out of pawn. I'm just going to sell them to you right now. And the guy looked at me and he said, dude, I don't know if you're, and the minute he started to talk, my mind started slamming shut. It was like, oh my God, one more person who's going to say, what's wrong with you? One more person who's going to say, you have so much talent or ability, or you're a good athlete, or you're a smart man. Or what about for the wife? What about for those kids? I've heard it all. I've gotten the lectures from the best of them, and none of it ever mattered. I would agree that what you were saying was true and the change needed to happen, but the needed power to affect change is not in me, not unaided. I need a higher power. I didn't know that. I asked God to help me, but I still smoked crack, shot dope, and drank liquor. Still crashed cars drunk, still beat on people. I mean, it was just on me all the time. And I knew nothing worked. But here's what was different. The man turned it on me. And what it says in the big book is an alcoholic armed with the truth about themselves can enter into that place that no one else could go. Not punishment, not love, nothing, not rewards. It doesn't matter. You know, you can take it all away or give it all to me. It doesn't matter. I use no matter what. And so the man in the pawn shop, before my mind could slam shut, he flipped it on me, said, dude, I don't know if you're in trouble or not, but I used to be in trouble. I couldn't stop drinking and drugging. And I went to this detox and he drew me a mental mind map, told me it's down by the airport. It's the south side of the runway. You go in there, they'll help you. He goes, I went in there, they helped me. He said, that was 4 years ago. And I own this pawn shop and everything in it. And then he looked at me and he smiled and he goes, you know, a lot of the stuff in here you used to own. And I thought, damn, that's some cold-blooded shit, right? But boy, was he right. You know what I was doing? I know that this was the most important moment of my life today. I was being 12-stepped. I had no idea what a 12-step was. But this man, as he was talking to me, he clung to, like I had read earlier, He knew that his dark past was his greatest asset, and he used that as a way to get into my soul. And in the middle of what I now know was my miracle, I've been praying to God for a miracle. God, save me. God, take me. Send me an angel, please. And here was the angel God sent me, a chubby dude in a pawn shop. That wasn't what my diseased mind told me my angel should look like. And while this angel was working his 12-step on me, you know what I was doing? I was judging him. I was thinking, oh, this poor son of a bitch. If I just let him preach a while longer, maybe I'll get an extra 20 for my Bose speakers. But that tells me something about this God that I found, this higher power, is a result of working these steps. This God is so merciful. This power is so great to think about this. God, here's a question to ask yourself. How elaborate was God's plan to get to your heart, to work a 12-step on you? And so this, you know, this plan was unfolding. It was remarkable. And here I am in the middle of my miracle. And I was judging this man. Thinking, poor son of a bitch. Just let him preach a while, right? And it's like, oh, how? So what kind of a God would not only set up your miracle, deliver it to you, and then still love you when you're shoving that miracle up God's ass? I mean, that's where it was for me. That's how savage my mindset was. But I ended up in that detox because here's something super important. It doesn't matter what I think, it matters what I do. And the right actions will always trump negative thinking. The right actions will always trump my darkest past. If I take the action, amazing things will happen. So I fell in line right away. I got behind men like Terry, men like Ralph White. I got behind these people that were living it and doing it. And I started to do it myself. And then the results started flowing in. I started feeling better about myself. I started being proud. I remember when I did my first inventory, I wrote it out. Well, I did one in treatment, but I got out of treatment. And as soon as I got out of treatment, I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. I write my second inventory. I'm probably 60 days sober. And I'm sitting in my backyard with my sponsor. And I read him my step four, right? And so we're doing that fifth step. And when I'm done, he looks at me and he goes, dude, is there anything else? I said, no, it's all there. He goes, you sure there's nothing else? I said, yeah, I'm sure. He goes, I'm not talking about something you don't know. I'm talking about something that's right there in the front of your mind right now. He said, because if there's something there and you withhold it, you will not stay sober. That's not a threat. That's just our experience. He said, and the very best you could hope for would be to one day be sitting there with the opportunity to give that shit up one more time. Is there anything else? I looked in that man's eyes and I told him what I was never going to tell. And when I did that, the tears were streaming down my face. And he looked at me and he said, thank you for sharing your truth with me, man. I love you, bro. And so I did not deliver, so I got rid of it because I just had to trust this process, but I had to trust it entirely. Half measures avail us nothing. I had to give it all. So I gave it all to this program. I started putting in the work. I followed the example of people going into jails because that was the jam here, right? If you had 6 months, you could go into jails. I started going into meetings every week into correctional facilities when I had 6 months of sobriety. I've been doing a weekly jail meeting for the past 31 years. Now, I'm not telling you that to go, oh, look at this dude, but this is the same man who couldn't be faithful to his own wife. This is the same man who robbed his children. This is the same man whose mother and father went to their graves scared to death that I was going to beat them to it. This was the man who had no integrity, who couldn't even take his own son in his arms. That's how much power is unleashed here. But when I talk about God to you gentlemen, it's important that you understand, when I talk about God, I'm talking about you. As I look across these screens of men looking back at me, I see God. Because God did not come to me through the Bible. God didn't come to me through the big book either. God comes to me through the big book and the Bible now. But God came to me in the beginning as the man of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how God showed up then. And that's how God's showing up this morning, as the sun is starting to rise and I feel its warmth on a brand new day. This is a day where my thought life is, wow, I got a good life. I'm going to have a really nice Sunday. I used to wake up Sunday mornings come to Sunday morning coming down, like Johnny Cash would sing. The worst feelings, you know, what did I do last night? Living a life filled with shame and pain and regret is no way to live. So I decided if I'm going to be sober, I'm going to do it. I decided if I'm going to be married, I want to be in a love affair. And so when I worked those steps and it was explained to me, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry the message to the alcoholic and the addict, but practice the principles in all our affairs. It doesn't say try that part, I don't think. I think it says to do that part. That's in my power, right? Can I change my broken past? No. Can I bring my mother and father back from the grave? No. Can I undo the bankruptcies, the car repossessions that were in my past before I got clean? No. Can I undo a broken life of lies and deceit? I can't go back in time, but in a very real way, by working my steps in these times, it amends my past and it clears up my life looking backwards. So I decided that if I was going to stay sober, I had to be faithful to my wife. It's what men do, right? I used to think a man was somebody getting the bed down. Man is somebody beat your ass. That's not a man. Cheating on your woman isn't what men do. That's the act of cowardice. What real men do is they honor their families. What real men do is cash the paycheck and bring the whole check home, not skim some off to pay the casino or the bookie or the bullshit. I decided that I had used drugs and alcohol in insane ways, and I better find a new way to live, a design for living, like it says. And I started doing the work. And as a result of doing the work then and doing the work now, I've had an incredible experience, right? My life keeps getting better and better as I work this program. Now, I've been through the steps a whole bunch of times. I just reworked them again in November and December of last year, so about 6 months ago. Now, the reason I keep working my steps is because more is revealed. The reason I still sponsor, and I sponsor a lot of men, is because my healing has come through sponsorship. As I sit with, I was working with the sponsee, and this dude was doing good, right? But he had a long history of relapse. I said, bro, let's work this thing. So he was riding the bus and he was doing really good. And he got a little job and he hadn't talked to his own mother in years, hadn't talked to his own daughter in years. And next thing you know, he's talking to his mother. He's talking to his daughter. The music of AA, the miracle of this program is happening in his life. I go over to the halfway house to meet with him. And he goes, hey, Terry, I got a bike. I said, that's awesome, bro. I'm happy you got a bike, right? So now you can ride to work. And I said, where'd you get the bike? And he said, I got it at the Circle K. I don't know if they got Circle K's, the convenience mart. And I said, they don't sell bikes. He goes, yeah, I know. I bought it from a dude in the parking lot. I said, brother, you mean you bought a stolen bike? And he said, "Nah, man, I paid for it." And I said, "Listen, bro, that's not a bike. That's a crack pipe. That's a bottle. You ride that bike, you got this on, you know, even though you paid for it." He goes, "Well, man, you're the one that got a car. What do you think I ought to do?" I said, "Well, if I were you, I'd take the bike up to the police station. Give them your name and number. Tell them where you bought it. And if nobody claims it, get it back and keep riding the bus. Because riding the bus is giving you time to read the big book. And your life's getting better." And he looked at me and goes, "Nah, man, I don't think I'm going to do that." What do you think happened to that man? You all know the story, right? That guy's fucked. He's still fucked. I hear from him every now and then. That dude has not been able to pick up a 30-day chip in the past 15 years. No guarantee if you pick up, you ever put it down again. So it's so here's the thing, man. I'm not rigid. I am real. I know what works. I know what doesn't work. The step work I've been doing recently, the step work that's been rocking my soul, is that I actually have it. My desk is a mess. If you saw it, it's filled with step work. So I took the last, here's work that I did on the 12th step. That's a lot of writing on a step 12 for a man with 30 years at the time, 31 years. There's a lot of work to be done. Back on this guy who had that bike. So I'm thinking, man, this dumbass. And then I realized, Terry, you remember when you robbed that Huffy bike factory? Oh, I remember that now. And I got to go back and make amends to that bike company. And they were out of business. So there was no direct place to go do it. So I started buying bikes and donating them to all the local auctions. So Cocaine Anonymous, Heroin Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, when they got auctions out here, they usually got a bike I've donated for sale in that auction. I've had more step work. I've had more amends, more big amends between 15 and 31 than I had in the first 15 years of my sobriety. And I don't say that as a, like, that's not a bad thing that I'm telling you. I've not ever deliberately left anything off an inventory except that thing that I copped to in the beginning. And I gave that up before that step five was done. But so what happens is by sponsoring others, people keep jogging my memory or things come up. And you know what's interesting is sometimes I've been stuffing my feelings so deep for so long that there's shit inside me that can't even imagine. I was on a trail run. I was 15 years sober and I'm running and I'm praying. I go, "God, thank you. I'm 15 years clean today. All my amends are done." And then all of a sudden I hear a voice in my head say, "What about those dudes you fucked over in Germany?" And I said, "I don't even remember their names." And then I hear Curry and Dean. I don't remember their rank, E4 and E5. Literally, it had taken 30 years from the behavior to reach my conscious mind. And it had taken my diseased mind 30 seconds to try to shove it back down. But I knew in that moment that if I did not deal with that and find a way to make amends for that, that I would not stay sober. Because we encounter ourselves and our story as time goes by, and what we do with it is our responsibility. So I thought, okay, don't forget this, Terry. You got to get busy on this. Call your sponsor when you get off the mountain. So I start running. I go, "Well, at least that's all." And then the next thing I hear in my head is, "What about abortion?" Oh, that had never shown up on an inventory. Some things don't fit. And so much step work is so like, what was I? What was my part? Selfish, whatever it is. Some of that shit is so narrow that it allows me to think in narrow ways. So I need to pray before I do my step work. I need to follow the leadership of people that are opening their minds and their hearts and looking at what's available. How can I learn to do something different? So a lot of the step work that I do these days has a lot of writing involved because it's going into my experience, not checking boxes. So as I was doing this step work, that timer was to tell me, because I don't want to do all the talking. I want to have an opportunity to hear some from you. But so one of the things I've done recently is I wrote out, what is my ideal as a man? In the big book, it calls us to write our sexual ideal. But what about my ideal as a man? What kind of a man do I want to be? And so if I don't have an idea of who I want to be, then achieving something better is impossible. But by writing out my ideal, and I thought about what kind of a man do I want to be? And I wrote it out, what kind of a husband I want to be? What kind of a father do I want to be? So I will tell you this as a result of doing this kind of work. What kind of ethics do I want to have in my career? And I wrote out my ideal, and I got to tell you what, man, it is a blessing to live up to it. So I've been married to my wife, Donna, for 44 years now. I've been sober 31. We have a great relationship today. It's not by chance, it's by design. The design for living that the program is a design for a better relationship. Because the only place that you will find success before work is in a dictionary. You got to get busy. And so I apply the principles of this program in my marriage and in my relationship with my kids and my friends. So I got this ideal of who I want to be. I will tell you this. I used to run when I was a little boy, and then the disease took away my love of running. I used to be a smart kid. I had a good mind. I used to love to write. And then the disease took that away. If I had to describe addiction or alcoholism with one word, the word I choose is thief. That thief came into my life and started taking everything that mattered. But this program is a great the restorative powers of this program. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. And in Phoenix, our symbol is the phoenix, which is a mythological bird that rose from the ashes to a great life. So I got all in, right? I'm all in on my ideal. I know what I want to do. I ask God to help me to be there. I surround myself with men that encourage me to do what's right. I gave up my love of running as a little boy because the minute I started getting high, there is no place for track and field. And so for my 50th birthday, I decided I'm going to go run a marathon. And people said to me, they said, you're going to run a marathon at 50? They said, you ever run before? And I said, yeah, once upon a dream, a little boy who used to like to chase the clouds. And they go, what about a half? You know, what's wrong with that? I go, man, I never did a half of anything. So I said, I'm going to do it. And you know what my brothers in recovery said? How can we help you? And we started running teams. We started training together. And I've ran a bunch of marathons. And then at 60, I decided I want to run an ultra marathon. That's a long way. And my brothers in recovery said, hey, man, we're pulling for you, dude. You can do this. Whatever the mind of man can see and believe it can achieve, that's what a man named W. Clement Stone said a long time ago. And so I started running. The last race I had, when the gun went off that morning, I did 100K through desert mountains and hills. And when I crossed the finish line after 17 hours and 7 minutes of running, my mind filled with one thought. The miracle is not that I finished. The miracle is that I had the courage to begin. Because I got a disease that centers in my mind that knows my story, that knows all the wrongs I've ever been or all the wrongs I've ever done. And it tells me, who are you to try to be great? Who are you to try to run a marathon or an ultra? You ain't nothing but nothing, motherfucker. That's what my head was still trying to say to me with all these years. But guess what? I got a different voice today. I have a voice that is your voice. It's the voice of recovery. It's the voice of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the voice of whatever anonymous fellowship you go to. And that voice pushes back against the lie. And it tells that diseased mind of mine, thank you for sharing. Now shut the fuck up. And let's get busy living this life. So I live my life with wide open, man. Why not? So I started, I've done the things that I want to do, part of my ideal. So I'm 67 years old. And I got a love affair with my wife. And I will tell you this, that there is a little blue pill, not fentanyl, not Viagra. But it ain't a little blue pill. It's a little big. But that's the blue pill. It's this program. Because trust is the aphrodisiac. Me and my wife, we have an intimate love affair. And when I'm hitting it, brother, I hit it like fucking King Kong. It's 67. Because there's nothing between me and my wife except love. So what I'm telling you is that we were born to be great. We were born to manifest greatness. I wasn't born to be some, I remember begging the dope man. I remember the dope man running late and sitting there thinking, where in the fuck is that son of a bitch? And then when the dope man shows up 2 hours later, you got it? Oh, dude, sorry, I'm late. Oh, no problem at all, right? It's like this disease cut my tongue out, cut my nuts off, took away my pride, my vigor, my integrity. And I'm begging people for money and for dope. And oh, my God, that is no way to live, gentlemen. You know that. That's why you're all here. That's why you're all seekers, because you don't get a man like Tarek to sponsor you unless you want to get real. But how real you get is on you, not on him. I know his story. I know mine. So I got busy, right? So the last deal I did on my steps, I did this exercise, and I did it out of a book. It wasn't out of the big book. It was out of a new book on working the steps called the 12-Step Companion Guide. It's a book that was put out by Cocaine Anonymous. And in it, my step 11, here's my step 11. What you do is you write down like 10 or 12 of the bad shit that's happened in your life. Major shit, not necessarily all bad. And then you write down these items. Then what you do is you meditate on it. And then you write down next to each one of them where you saw the hand of God in that event, right? So I wrote down a bunch of deals. The first one was I was hitting the head with a baseball bat and nearly bled to death. Where's the hand of God, right? Being betrayed by, I wrote down a lot of these wounds. And when I went back and I looked at it, what I realized was this: God was in all of it. And I heard a song in my head. It's a Motown song. And it went, got to make the best of a bad situation. Bad situation. You know that song, right? And so I thought that's what God's been doing my whole life, making the best of bad situations. And then what I realized as a result of reviewing that work with my sponsor is that it didn't matter whether I started the shit show or it was started by somebody else. It didn't matter whether I put it in motion or circumstances did, that God was in all of it with me. So when I got thrown out of the military in disgrace and the yellow stripe painted down my back as a coward to my country, as a failure one more time, where was the hand of God in that? And then I realized, well, man, I was shooting so much dope overseas that I had not been thrown out of the military, I would have ended up dead. And then that sent me to college where I met a man, and then I was able to petition the military to get my discharge reversed. And I did. And I'm a full and honorable veteran today. But it was at that school that I ended up meeting my wife, Donna. Where's the hand of God? One wouldn't happen without the other, gentlemen. So what I'm getting at is that this power is so much bigger than us. The only thing that limits the power of God or the power of this program is me. Me and my fear, me and my lack of willingness. So just because we do things right in life, it doesn't mean it's always going to work out right. There ought to be a sign over every one of these meeting halls that says life happens here. Sometimes life is hard. Mine's been super hard the last couple of years. The last couple of years, man, in the past few months, I've had three men that I sponsored for 27 years die, natural causes. But it's sad. The man who first opened the big book for me and we'd sit on my front porch and we would do step work, he died. During COVID times, I started a relief deal. And what we started doing, we called it Helping Hands for the Navajo Nation. And we started, me and a bunch of my brothers in recovery, we had no service work to do. All the meetings were shut down. So we started delivering food to the Native American Indian reservations here. And it was a hell of a deal. We thought we would get a pickup truck or two full of stuff. We ended up taking more than 3 million pounds of food, PPE, diapers, dog food, you name it, to the reservation. That was through a connection I had with one of my brothers in recovery who was a Navajo up on the res. He died. He got the Delta variant that killed him. I'm thinking, that's not how the story's supposed to end. Our stories aren't supposed to be tragic, but I've had a son follow my footsteps in addiction. Thank God he got clean. He's okay today. But life happens here, right? Health problems, loved ones die. I've had so many people close to me die. But you know what? I don't feel bad about the deaths of those who die honorably. The tragedy are all these people that are dying out of our home group with fentanyl and shit like that, and they never even got to live. And then right across the street, my youngest son lives, and his wife got pregnant. And I said, man, something's wrong. The doctor said, we got to go for special tests. And they did, and they went and got these tests, and they came back, and they said that my granddaughter, Nora, the baby that was getting ready to be born, was going to be a little person. She had a disease called achondroplasia, dwarfism. And I thought, what the fuck? What do you do with that, right? And right away, as a father and a grandfather, my heart broke. What do I do? You know, the world is so cruel. Thinking, what's going to happen with this little girl? And then I thought, no, Terry, the world isn't cruel. The world is beautiful. There are some cruel folks in it, but those aren't the people that are in my circle. The people that are in my circle are men like you. And we love each other and we support each other. But life happens here. And I got to tell you what, man, it was super hard praying during those months. Nora's 1 year old now. And I've had to work hard the past 2 years to pray, man. I get on my knees one morning, I'm saying my prayers, and I hear God, because I start every day on my knees asking God to keep me clean. And every night doing my nightly review on my knees. And I heard this voice in my head say, what are you doing on your knees? You know, prayer doesn't work. Prayer's bullshit. Get off your knees. You prayed for your friend Walt, and he's dead. You prayed for Sean, the Indian I worked with. He's dead. You prayed for your granddaughter, Nora. Hey, buddy, you're 0-for-3. Get off your knees. Doesn't matter how long you've been clean, man. The disease lives and sometimes reigns supreme in the subconscious mind. But because of my daily disciplines, because of men like you feeding my soul and my spirit, I get to face my difficulties. And I know that with my brothers in recovery and with the God that I love, that everything's going to be great. And my son and his wife and Nora, this little one-year-old, is the most beautiful little girl, and it's all good, man. And this weekend, they're actually at the Little People of America's convention in Utah. And you know what? When I dropped him off at the airport on Thursday, I called my wife, and I started crying. I said, Donna, you know, we may not have done it all right, but guess what we did? We showed our kids what to do when you got a problem. You seek others that have a similar problem. and together we find a common solution. Peace, brothers.
Holy shit. Oh my God. Amazing, amazing talk, man. Terry, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. There were so many wonderful stories. The storytelling society that we are, and talking about losing your humanity and the regenerative power of God. So obvious, like as you're telling these stories, that the man telling the story is not the man in the story, and the transformational power that was unleashed, man. And that, you know, I love when we talk about the dark past becoming our only asset, and like how we can change the past because it allows us to tap the human heart and other people by sharing that aspect of our lives. And we win the confidence of the people we're trying to carry the message to. And we can empathize at a deep level, which is then when I look back over the events of our lives and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Now I see the hand of God in everything. And the thing that touched me the deepest is that you said, as much freedom is available as we are willing to seek. That is such a powerful and true statement. Brother, I love you, man. Thank you so much for spending your Sunday morning with us. I know some of these guys got other commitments and stuff. If anybody has a question for Terry, has anything they'd like to share, you can unmute yourself and have at it here. Brother Terry, thank you, thank you, thank you, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, Tarek, did I go long, brother? I was getting a little caught up in this, man.
Man, that's exactly how long you were supposed to go, my friend.
You got it.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
I was surprised that the time was over. I was like, dude, thank you so much. I mean, dude, you brought me to tears several times. It was amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what happens. There's a distortion in time when we get enveloped in a story like that, man.
I set a 30-minute timer. And when the timer went off, I thought, okay, that way I'm going to get a good opportunity to try to learn some stuff from y'all. And the next thing you know, I looked at my watch and I